You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Comedy Central.
Welcome back to The Daily Show. My guest tonight is a conservative commentator with her own show on the Blaze Network. Please welcome Tommy Lahren.
I'm in the lion's den, Trevor.
I'm not a lion at all. Is that like an African thing? No. welcome to the show. Before we get into it, I know who you are because my Facebook feed has you in it. There are a lot of people who don't, so if you don't know Tommy Lahren, this is a little taste of her show.
The protesters are still out in force, but let's be honest, they're not protesters. They're crybabies with nothing better to do than meander around the streets with their participation trophies and false sense of purpose. This isn't for Hillary. I'm not even sure this is against Trump. It's the same thing we've seen time and time again with these so-called protesters and demonstrators. It started with the Occupy Wall Street brats, moved on to the more militant and overtly aggressive Black Lives Matter More crowd, cycled through the DNC paid violence instigators, and now here we are in November of 2016 with President-elect Donald Trump and a crowd of misfit babies formed from every failed movement, all sandwiched together to become the largest group of whiners the country has ever seen.
All right.
Pretty much covers it, doesn't it, Trevor?
Quick question. Like, why are you so angry?
I'm actually not that angry. It's just there's things that need to be said, Trevor, and a lot of people are afraid to say them.
In an angry way. I mean, you can't say you're not angry, and I mean, this is what you're known for. It's a strange thing to say, I'm not angry, but that is the one thing. It's like Ellen saying, I don't like dancing. It's like, yeah, you do, Ellen. You do. you are angry about everything, it seems.
Sometimes people just need to be called in their. You know, I mean, when...
When you say your shit, though, what in particular?
Because well,
this is the thing.
Protesting a, you know, fair and free election, that to me, you're going to get called in your shit a little bit. It's time to clear the streets. It's time to accept reality. It's time to move on. Time to make America great again.
You consider yourself a conservative?
I do.
Okay.
I mean, I'm a millennial, so I don't really like labels. But yes, I'm conservative in thought.
Sorry, my brain, you just gave a label to say you don't like labels. But anyway,
We exist on a spectrum,
no,
Trevor.
No,
I mean, would you consider yourself a liberal?
That was, that was just funny. That was just funny. It was just a funny moment.
I'm a millennial. It
didn't
surprise you.
It's just funny. In terms of Black Lives Matter, like, you know, you have quite a record. For somebody who is not racist, you have to spend a lot of time saying, I'm not racist. What is your biggest issue with Black Lives Matter?
I think, and I've said this many times, it started with good intentions. I think it was. It was well-intentioned. The moment that they started pushing hands up, don't shoot, which is a false narrative, proven time and time again to be a false narrative, the minute that that became their slogan, the minute that protesting turned into rioting and looting and burning and militant actions, that's when I lost respect for Black Lives Matter.
Okay, but now here's my thing. Let's address each of these things one by one. When you go protesting, turning into rioting and looting, that's not a Black Lives Matter phenomenon. That is what happens when there is a protest a lot of the time. There were people who rioted and looted when teams won in Chicago years ago. It doesn't mean that they are now bad people. That's what happens. There are some bad people in every instance. Going back to Black Lives Matter, though, for you to say that, you say they have good intentions. They had the good intentions. How are you labeling out the actions of a few and condemning an entire group?
Because
I don't understand that.
They subscribe to the Black Lives Matter movement. They say, we are the Black Lives Matter movement. Fry 'em like bacon. F the police.
They're saying
those things. These are a few people. This is not the Black Lives Matter that is not the platform, though.
I saw it in my city of Dallas. I saw what a Black Lives Matter protest looked like. And I saw 5 fallen officers because of it.
That's not fair and that's true.
No, it is fair, Trevor, because the shooter said, point blank shooter said he's doing this because of Black Lives Matter.
Yes, and there are many things you can say. I mean, if you go outside, you can say anything about doing something because of you cannot deny that the man had mental issues as well and he was in a tough place. Just because you say the thing doesn't mean it's what it stands for, right? Because you're the same person who argued on your show that just because Donald Trump has supporters from the KKK doesn't mean he's in the KKK. So it goes against that argument. You can't say he did it because of.
But the shooter said,
Black Lives Matter has never said go out and shoot people. I'm saying you're saying this to your audience, and I honestly do not understand where you're getting that from. Just because a person, what if somebody says, I felt emboldened by Tommy Lahren, and so I went out and I shot black people. Are you now responsible?
Is that your platform? It's not one or two people. If you look at it, every city, look at the protests that have gone on in Baltimore, in Ferguson, in New York City, the protests that have now turned to anti-Trump protests. These are not a few people.
Okay.
This is mass crowds of people.
Okay.
They're doing this in the name of Michael Brown. They're doing this in the name of Freddie Gray. They're doing it as the front of Black Lives Matter, and the mainstream media is emboldening these people.
Okay, so then let's use that same logic that you're using then, and then go, police, are the police racist? Because police in many cities, you look at Baltimore, you look at what happened in New York, you look at what happened in the case of Walter Scott, you tell me are police racist because they've been shown to harass black people unfairly, they've been shown to shoot black people when they're unarmed. Does that mean the police are racist then? Because that's the same logic you're using.
It's really not though, Trevor, because the mainstream media is not emboldening them as a group. It's not. And did you know that a black man is 18.5 times more likely to shoot a police officer than a police officer is to shoot a black man? Those are statistics no one wants to talk about.
Yeah, here's the thing. So let me ask you this then. If you say, as you said when you walked out, I'm not as mean as people think I am, I'm not the person that people think I am, what do you wish people would understand about you that are in another bubble? What do you wish people would understand about you on the other side?
I wish that we could disagree with each other without thinking that we are bad people or ill-intentioned folks. So because I criticize a black person or I criticize the Black Lives Matter movement, that doesn't mean that I am anti-black. It does not mean that I don't like black people or that I'm a racist. It means I'm criticizing a movement. I criticize Colin Kaepernick. That doesn't mean that I don't believe in his First Amendment rights. It means that I believe in my First Amendment rights to criticize him. So it doesn't make me a bad person. It doesn't make me a racist to point out. I mean, I've never used racial slurs to address people. I've never looked down on someone because of their skin color. To me, true diversity is diversity of thought, not diversity of color. I don't see color. I go after Hillary Clinton and she is white as they come.
You don't see color. So what do you do at a traffic light? I don't believe in that at all when people say that. There's nothing wrong with seeing color. It's how you treat color that's more important.
You're right, it is.
Here's my thing. Like, all these points that you make are great, and I do believe that you believe them, and I don't believe anyone is actively trying. There are a few people who are trying to be bad from their point of view. But when I look at what you're saying, you say you're not pushing a racist narrative, you're criticizing. Do you really believe you're criticizing and you're not malintentioned when you say things like Black Lives Matter is the new KKK? Because you realize Black Lives Matter can't be the new KKK. The KKK is still around. They have not vacated their premises. And most importantly, to say Black Lives Matter is the new KKK is to really, really minimize what the KKK did and what they stand for. That is not the same thing. Surely you understand the incendiary feeling of your comments. You know that, surely.
It's controversial, but I think there are some things that need to be said. And when the Black Lives Matter movement is going out with signs saying, fry them like bacon, F the police, when they're going out saying, if you see a white person, target them, that is happening, Trevor. That happened in Milwaukee not too long ago. That is happening. So when that now becomes the narrative and you're starting to loot, burn, and riot, what did the KKK do?
That is not, look, we'll go around in circles. Did you say, what did the KKK do?
No, what did they do? When you're saying, listen, Trevor.
Wow.
Trevor. When there are people in the street saying, if you see a white person, beat their ass, does that not sound reminiscent of the KKK or their motives to you?
Is that the narrative of Black Lives Matter, or are there people who are saying that within a crowd of other human beings? There is a distinction between a movement and the people. That is something that we keep coming back to. But let's go back to what you were saying on Colin Kaepernick and the national anthem. This is something I don't understand. And when I watch your videos, I go, I truly do not understand. You say, Colin Kaepernick is exercising his First Amendment rights, and you are exercising your First Amendment rights in criticizing him. Mm-hmm. So what you're saying is you have the right to say anything you want, so shut up.
No, not at all. I'm saying I don't agree with what he did.
Yes.
I think that he went about it the wrong way. I don't think he understands.
What is the right way? When people say that, I'm always fascinated. What is the right way?
Here's
the
deal.
So here's a black man in America who says, I don't know how to get a message across. If I march in the streets, people say I'm a thug. If I go out and I protest, people say that it's a riot. If I bend down on one knee, then it's not. What is the right way? That is something I've always wanted to know. What is the right way for a black person to get attention in America?
Taking it out. Trevor, taking it out on our flag and our national anthem, to me.
But how?
Why would you take out your perceived oppression of black people out on the national anthem and our flag? A country that you live in, a country that you benefit from, a country that people of all races have died for, have died to protect, have died for the vote, died to be enfranchised by this nation. How do you then go and disrespect the flag and the anthem of that country? Why is that the outlet?
Well, maybe you're a person who's lived and read through history and you realize that a lot of those people of every color who died for this country, some of them didn't have the rights that their fellow servicemen had when they came back to the country after
and
fighting.
And that flag means a lot to those folks, too.
Maybe you're one of those people who realizes that the penal system in America was designed to oppress black people. It was designed to enslave people. It is a relic of slavery. Maybe you're one of those people. So what I don't understand is a guy is kneeling in the corner. I don't understand why that offends you so much. It's not even like he's trying to sing over you. If he was doing that, he's like, oh, say, can me see? No, he's singing. He's not doing anything that affects you. I don't understand why it gets to you. I genuinely don't. He's in a corner kneeling by himself. Why does that offend you so much?
For me, I know what that flag means to me. I know what that flag means to those that are fighting for our country right now. It's bigger than a piece of cloth. It's a symbol of patriotism. Our national anthem has meant a lot to a lot of people. It's got a lot of people through very hard times. In this country, it's got its scars, it's got its wounds, it's got its history, but I still believe it's the greatest nation on the face of the earth, and I believe if you live in this country, you can want to better it. But to disrespect our flag and our anthem in that way and that be your outlet to get out whatever aggression you have, whether it be passive or active aggression, I disagree with it. And so he has every right to do it. That's his First Amendment rights, and I agree with his First Amendment right to do it. I don't agree with what he did. So because I don't agree with what he did, then now I should shut up? Because I'm white, so I should shut up? I shouldn't be able to talk about black issues because I'm white?
No one brought up white at all. I never said that. I don't see color. I don't think that that's what the argument is. What I'm saying is, I asked you one question, and that is, how should a black person bring up their grievances? That's all I ask, how? If that's not the right way, if marching isn't the right way, what is the right way?
When what he said was he is protesting the anthem and the flag because of the oppression of black people in this country. I would like him to further explain what he's talking about when he's discussing the black oppression in this country.
Which he has.
Also, is it against police? Is it against the government? I'm not sure what oppression he's discussing. I would love to have him come on my show and discuss it with me. To me, when you make the flag and you make the anthem the outlet for your anger, or the outlet through which you're going to protest your country that you live in and you reside in that you take $19 million a year from, I don't think that that is the correct outlet for your anger.
So
what is he protesting?
Again, you haven't answered my question of how you want black people. I'm just asking how. And I'm asking you honestly, I'm not saying in a challenging way, I'm saying to you, I don't know the answer apart from these methods. So I would like to know if you've ever thought of a how, because you're the first person I've met who said this. I've seen this message online. I'm not labeling you as the bad person. I just want to know if you've ever thought of the how. That's all I want to know.
For me, I think there are a lot of folks in this country, I being a woman, I didn't have rights after black people until women got the right to vote. But because I feel like I'm a woman and I'm marginalized in some way, I don't protest my country. I don't see what he's protesting. I would like to know exactly what he is protesting. It's a very...
So how do you... No. How do you protest then?
I don't protest because I'm not a victim.
I guess we can go back and forth on a lot of these issues. It's an interesting place to be in because, honestly, you've won, you know? Like, your side has won, as you say. You know, the liberal snowflakes are melting in the streets as they protest. And now I would like to know from your side, genuinely, as someone who's won, do you believe that Donald Trump will follow through on his promises?
I will be a vocal opponent if he doesn't. I am not somebody that gets on the cheerleading bandwagon. If he does something I disagree with, I will discuss it. I did before I was a Trump supporter. I was critical of Trump. I was a Marco Rubio girl for a long time. And then I started to see that was going to be our nominee, and I said, it's him or Hillary. A lot of Americans were in that position.
Yeah.
And then I got closer to the campaign, and I started seeing some of the things he was saying, and I started seeing the effect he was having on people and the things that he was saying that was touching people and making them feel like
touching people.
Yeah, he was.
He really was.
I could use some of that every now and then, right? Bill's a little busy. Bill's a little busy.
I appreciate you being on the show. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Trevor.
It is a conversation we should continue having. You can find Tommy's final thoughts at facebook.com/TommyLaren. Tommy Lahren, everybody. We'll be right back.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/news. That's LifeLock.com/news to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
Grand Canyon University's RN to BSN online degree program makes earning your bachelor's in nursing possible. Balance online coursework with local in-person clinicals to position yourself for potential leadership opportunities in the time you have from wherever you are, leaving room for what matters. Achieve your goals with your personalized plan and team behind you. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Visit gcu.edu.
My guest tonight is a former federal prosecutor and governor of New Jersey who ran for president and served as head of President Trump's transition team. His new book is called Let Me Finish, Trump, the Kushners, Bannon, New Jersey, and the Power of In-Your-Face Politics. Please welcome Governor Chris Christie. Welcome back to the show, sir.
Happy to be back.
Interesting. You were the third guest on my show.
I was.
You were also one of the only, in fact, you are the only Republican who supports Trump who's come back to the show post-Trump winning.
Huge bravery.
So brave, Chris.
So brave. Brave.
You also
so
got
brave.
Nothing to lose, which helps.
Well, you know, listen, it's... you know, sometimes that's when you're bravest, Trevor.
That
you know?
Is when
all
you're
right?
bravest, right?
You never know.
How do you feel about these Republicans who seem to be pro-Trump or with him, and then when they're leaving, all of a sudden they're like, he is the worst thing in the world. It seems like bravery does happen when the people leave.
Yeah, when you don't have to look at them every day or something,
right.
I guess that's probably it. But, you know, they weren't brave in the beginning, you know, and what they're doing now is just faux bravery, so
that's
the way it goes.
Hurricane Sandy was, for you, one of the most seminal moments in your life and your career. It's interesting because you went on this roller coaster ride of approval ratings. Hurricane Sandy, around that time, people said, Chris Christie could be the next president of the United States.
I recall that.
Yeah. And then, a while later, like, this picture was one of those that made you one of the most hated men.
Yeah.
In the United States, when like a beach was shut down and there was a shutdown and you were out on the beach with your family,
mm-hmm.
what was that like? Just genuinely from your side as a human being, going from like everyone loving to you to feeling like everyone hates you.
Try to make me cry.
No, but I'm serious.
No, though. I mean, listen, seriously, like that's often what political life is like. You know, very rarely is there somebody in political life who does anything that's worth anything,
right.
That remains popular all the way through, because if you're doing stuff that matters and stuff that needs to be done in your state or in this country, you're going to anger some people. You have to, because unless you're just giving everything away, unless you're just saying yes to everybody, even if you don't mean it, you're going to make some people angry. And so you know, to me, like, it's never fun. Mm-hmm. Like, you always would much rather be 75% than 15%.
Right.
But in the end, does it really matter? Like, to me, what matters is what you did and what you accomplished. And so for me, that's what always mattered the most. No one likes it. Anybody who says they like being unpopular at times is just completely full of it. I didn't like it. But I also tried to have some perspective on it, that that wasn't why I did it in the first place anyway, mm-hmm. was to be popular. And I used to tell my folks when we were at 75%, like, we're not keeping this in the desk drawer and, like, just looking at it and go, look how pretty that 75% is. Let's go spend it. Let's go do the difficult things that'll bring that down. And then you got to live with it.
You've written a book. Let me finish. Trump, the Kushners, Bannon, New Jersey, and the power of in-your-face politics. You take us through a little bit of how you began, a little bit of your life, the journey that made you into Chris Christie as people know you. And then you really get into the meat of the presidential campaign, from you announcing, from you going into the race, all the way through to dropping out, and then the story with Donald Trump.
Right.
Let's start at the beginning of this journey, when you were running and Donald Trump was running. You guys had been friends for a while.
Yeah, at that time, we'd been friends for about 14 years.
Did you think he stood a chance?
No.
Why not?
I thought the whole thing was a joke at the time. I really did. I mean, you know, he'd been talking about running for president for a long time.
Right.
I mean, going back 20 years. And so when he finally, look, he was getting older. And when he finally declared, I thought to myself, well, he's not going to stay in.
Uh-huh.
I mean, this is going to be something where he's going to do it for a little while, get into a debate or two, experience it, and then go, eh, I don't need this. I'm going to go away. So the whole premise of me, and not just me, but most of the other men and women that were up on that stage, was like, all right, he's getting some attention now, but he can't be serious about this.
Is that why you guys didn't work as hard to attack him? It felt like everyone was leaving him and just like, forget him, he's fun.
You know what it really was? Part of the problem was there were so many of us, and he had so much popularity in the polls early.
Yes.
That all the rest of us, there was just a little bit left for everybody. So you remember when people would go to attack him, like Rand Paul went to attack him with the gifts, and he would look at me and go, you're a 2%, you're nothing, you're never going to win, leave me alone, right? Or
you shouldn't even be on the stage.
You shouldn't be on the stage. Who are you? That kind of thing. And everybody saw that happening, and the media would react to that and play it over and over again. So it'd be like, you know, getting you know, sand kicked in your face, not just once, but like 100 times. And so people said, well, let's wait. The strategy of everybody was, let's wait till we're down to the last few, and then we'll go after him.
Uh-huh. But when you saw that happening, when you saw Trump becoming a viable candidate, the race changed quite a bit. Did it change your friendship?
You know, interestingly, no, because we never, except for one instance that I detail in the book.
Right. What is that instance?
Well, that instance was, I got the endorsement of the Manchester Union Leader in New Hampshire, which is the biggest newspaper in New Hampshire and the biggest endorsement to get in the primary. And he was really pissed.
Right.
And so he was in South Carolina when it happened, and then he gives some speech saying that, oh, you know, Bridgegate, he knew all about it.
Right.
I know he knew about it. He had breakfast with these people every morning. What were they talking about? It was all made up, right? All made up.
But how do you still stay friends with somebody who's accusing you of being part of something that is a crime?
Well, part of it is politics, right? I mean, people accuse people of everything in politics sometimes, and if you break every relationship you have with someone who says something bad about you, you're gonna be eating dinner alone in politics because it's a nasty game. But also what happened was when he did that, then I went after him. So I was in Iowa when he did that. That night I went after him and I said, listen, Donald Trump said a whole bunch of lies about me today. Let me tell you the truth. We don't need a wall.
Uh-huh.
We're never going to build a wall, even if he's elected. And if we ever did build a wall, I can guarantee you one thing. Mexico ain't ever going to pay for it.
Right.
And, you know, the crowd.
Do you still believe all of those things?
Listen, it looks like I was right.
Do you still believe all of those things?
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Right.
Listen, that's what I ran on. I don't think we need those things. Do we need some more security at the border? Of course we do. And I think everybody agrees on that.
Right.
But did we need what he was talking about then, which was a concrete wall from one end of the border to the other? No. And I said that at the time.
Right.
And now he doesn't even say anymore.
Yes.
That that's
now
what
he says
need.
A fence.
Right, a fence wall. Or steel slats or something like that. But the point
more like
was
a stern warning.
When I went after him, the next morning, Corey Lewandowski, who was campaign manager at the time, called my campaign manager and said, listen, Donald's really sorry. He didn't mean to say any of that. He knows it was wrong. He knows that wasn't true. And he wants a truce. And so I said to my guy, if he wants a truce, he calls me. And so he called me, and he admitted. He didn't mean it. He knew it wasn't true. He was just angry, And he apologized.
We haven't always agreed on everything. We fight and argue about stuff, but I've always appreciated that you come on the show and that you talk.
Listen, you're great.
Thank
and
you
I love coming
here.
On the show, and
thank
I love
you so
what
much,
you do.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Let me finish. It's a fascinating book, and it's available now. Governor Chris Christie, everybody.
Explore more shows from the Daily Show podcast universe by searching The Daily Show wherever you get your podcasts. Watch The Daily Show weeknights at 11, 10 Central on Comedy Central, and stream full episodes anytime on Paramount Plus.
This has been a Comedy Central podcast.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.